All right, good morning. Today's daf is Nedarim daf Mem Zayin. Today's shiur is once again sponsored anonymously L'schus Refua Shelema for Liana Mirol Bas Gabriela Rachel. We hope that the learning today serves as a schus for a complete and speedy recovery for Liana Mirol Bas Gabriela Rachel. We thank the sponsors very much, the anonymous sponsors very much for their sponsorship. So today we are going to pick up with a discussion of the last clause of the Mishnah that we had learned yesterday. Again, the last clause being a situation where a person says that konem lebeischa shani nichnas, that I am not going to enter your house. And we had drawn a distinction between that case and a case where the guy says konem bayis zeh shani nichnas, because if you say beischa, it has a connotation that the house is going to be usher ba'ano only so long as it's owned by the original owner. Whereas if a fellow says bayis zeh, it has the connotation that the nether attaches to the house, whether it continues to be owned by the original owner or not. And the Ran had pointed out, we had said yesterday, that what could wind up being a kula in one case winds up being a chumra in another case, because the halacha would be the inverse if the house fell down and was rebuilt. How so? Because if the guy said beischa, then even if the house falls down and is rebuilt, the house would remain usur because it still is beischa. Where if the guy said bayizeh, then only this house is usur, but another house, a replacement house that's built if the original house falls down, would be mutter. So it's just ironic, the Ran pointed out, that what winds up being a language that causes a greater extension of the isur in one case, the bayizeh language, which has the ability to continue to usur the house even in the case of a sale, would wind up causing less of an isur in a case where the house falls down, because the nether attaches only to bayis zeh, but not to a replacement house that this guy owns. So the Gemara is going to start with a discussion of that clause of the Mishnah, and is going to discuss in particular the ability of someone to asser something that's in his rishos even after it leaves his rishos. Now, to be clear, the case of the Mishnah was where the fellow said konem beischa shani nichnas, that where the fellow who made the neder was the mudar, was the person who was not able to have ana. The Gemara is going to be talking about what happens if the madir makes a neder and tries to asser something that's not in his, that's in his rishos even after it leaves his rishos. The Gemara is going to try to bring rayas from the fact that when you say that konem peiros elu alai, that I'm not able to eat these peiros are konem to me, then it's usur to eat not only things that grow from the peiros, but also chilufin of the peiros, also things that you exchange the peiros for, and the chilufin would be a davar shelo baliolam. So we're going to try to bring a raya from that braisa. And we're going to go back and forth. What's the reason that chilufin are usur? Are chilufin usur? Perhaps they're mutter. Perhaps the halacha by hektish and arla might be different than the halacha by neder. So we'll see all this in the Gemara and then the Mishnah on Mem Zayin Amabez. Perhaps we'll get to towards the end of the shir. Talks about various different languages again of neder, and talks about, well, if a person says that he's not able to have ana from his friend, and we had gotten a preview of this Mishnah the other day, that if a person says he's not allowed to have ana from his friend, then what's the situation with him being nene from certain communal things? So, for example, a Beis HaKnesses, and we had said the other day that a Beis HaKnesses is an example of something that is owned jointly. It's considered to be owned b'shutfus by everybody in the town. So if Reuven says that he's not able to have ana from Shimon, and there is a Beis HaKnesses in Reuven and Shimon's town, and it's owned jointly by everybody, is Reuven allowed to go into the Beis HaKnesses? Are there any eitzes to permit Reuven to go into the Beis HaKnesses? Is there a distinction between a Beis HaKnesses and certain other things which are considered to be hefker or owned by all of Klal Yisrael? So God willing, we'll hopefully get to that at the end of today's shir. But in any event, starting from the top of Mem Zayin Amad Aleph, Omer Lechavero, so says the Gemara like this, Boy Avimi, Avimi asks Akasha, Konim Labayis Zeh She'ata Nichnas, where, again, it's the fellow who's making the neder is not the mudar, but rather it's the madir. Reuven says to Shimon that this house is usur to you. Now the question is, meis o shemachru la'acher, what if Reuven then dies, or if Reuven sells the house to somebody else, mahu, so what's the halacha? So says the Gemara, the suffix is like this, adam osar davar sher bershuso l'cheshe yetze imir shuso, although, does the person have the ability to usur something that's in his rishus, even after it leaves his rishus, or not? So the Gemara tries to resolve the question as follows. So Amar Rava Tashma, try to bring a raya. Omer Libno, if a person says to his son, Konem Shi'i Atanen Eli, that Konem, you are not allowed to have Hana from me, Umeis, and then the fellow dies, Yershenu, then the son is Yoresh his father. How could the son be Yoresh's father? So the Ran explains that how does he take his Yerusha? He takes his Yerusha midine Torah, that the Torah stipulates that when a father dies, if he has a son, his son gets his nechassim. So it's not considered to be a benefit from his father that he's getting the nechassim. It's not like the father is giving him the nechassim. The Torah is giving him the nechassim. Aye, but how's he allowed to benefit from the nechassim of the fathers? So the Ran says, no, they're not. They're the nechassim of the father is only so long as the father's alive. Once the father dies and the son gets the nechassim midine Yerusha, midine Torah, then once the son gets the nechassim, midine Yerusha, they become the son's nechassim, and when the son is neneh from the nechassim, he's neneh from his own nechassim. But that's only so long as the father says, konem she'iata neneh li. That, however, if the father says, b'chayev v'moso, if the father says, you are not allowed to be neneh from me, both in my life and after my death, umeis, and then the father dies, lo yershenu, Then the son cannot be Yoresh the father. Now what does this mean? What does this mean, lo yershenu? So the Ran says, well, we have to be careful with the way we explain this. It doesn't mean that the son is not Yoresh the father at all. Why? Because as we had just said, that Yerusha is Dine Torah, that the Torah specifies and the Torah stipulates and directs how the Yerusha is supposed to work. And we know that ain adam masnel masha kasabat Torah, that you can't change certain things. So the fact that this guy makes a neder and says that his son's not allowed to have anah from him, both b'chayev b'moso, does not override the dine Yerusha. So the son is Yoresh, the son is going to be Yoresh the father, but once the son is Yoresh the father, he is not allowed to have hanah from the nechassim that he was Yoresh, because of the neder. Once he's Yoresh, he cannot benefit from the nechassim. So, and what should he do? So says the Ran, well, what he should do is he should give the property that he inherits to his brothers or to his sons, because he's not allowed to have anah from the property. However, if he has nothing to eat, says the Ran, he could borrow money from creditors, and the creditors can collect from that property. Because he does have the property, he's not able to directly benefit from the property, but he can indirectly benefit from the property by borrowing against it and then having creditors collect from the property. But says the Ran, also he has to be careful, he cannot direct creditors to go against the property, because if he directs creditors to go against the property, then it's considered as if he's being neneh from the property. The Rashba, however, disagrees with the Ran's fundamental premise. Again, the Ran's fundamental premise is that when he says b'chayv v'moso v'meis lo yershenu, the Ran had said, well, no, he is yorishim, but what it means is not able to have anah from what he's yorish. The Rashba says, no, it means that he's not yorishim at all. So, and the reason that you can override the Dine Torah is because the Dine Torah talk about a Yerusha of something. But this thing, Lagabe the son, is nothing. Why is this thing nothing? Because the son says that the father said that the son is not able to have Hana from his Nechasim, both Bechayev Ubamoso, if the son is asur bahana in the nechassim of the father, the nechassim of the father lagabe the son have no value, and if the nechassim have no value, then there's nothing to be yoresh. So it's not really as if you're directly overriding the dina yerusha and the Torah. It's not like you're saying, oh, instead of going to my son, they should affirmatively go to somebody else. You're just creating a scenario where the items to the son are worthless, and so there's nothing to be yoresh. So machlokes Rashba and the Ran, how to interpret what it means when it says lo yorshenu. But either way, what we see is, says the Gemara, getting back to here where the guy says that if the father said that the son is not allowed to have ana from his nechassim, both b'chayev uvamoso, and then the father dies, lo yorshenu, then the son does not inherit the father. Shmamina adamoser davar shebershuso lechashayetem ershuso shmamina. So we see from here a raya that a person can asur something in his rishos even after it leaves his rishos, and that's a good raya. So the Nemuka Yosef says that even though a person can prohibit something that's currently in his rishos to the extent it remains usur after it leaves his rishos, what he can't do is he cannot suffer to have a prohibition come into place after the item leaves his rishos. In other words, he's at least got to have ownership of the item when he's making the nether. If it's already out of his rishos when he's making the nether, then he's out of luck. He cannot asur it. And it's interesting that the Gemara uses this as a conclusive raya, because the question that the Gemara was posing was, can somebody asur something in his rishos after it leaves his rishos? You could have understood that the question was, if a person makes a stam neder, does he have the power to asur the thing on his friend even after it leaves his rishos? And we're bringing a raya from a situation where the guy expressly says that this thing should be asurd to you b'chayev uvamoso. So you might have thought that there's a basis to distinguish, just because you can cause the item to continue to be usur bahana even after it leaves his rishos, when you so expressly stipulate, you might have thought that that's not the halacha when you say it's stam. But the Gemara appears to be using this case as a conclusive raya in a situation even where you say it's stam, that the prohibition continues in effect even after it leaves the guy's rishos. So Tanan Hasam, the Gemara then segues into the following discussion. So we learn over there, so konem peiros ha'elu alai, if you say that these peiros are usur to me, konem heim alpi, konem heim lifi, if you use any of these lashonos of neder of a konem on peiros, then usur b'chilufeyem u'v'giduleyem, then it's usur in the chilufin and the gidulin. So first of all, what is chilufin? So the Tosfos and the Rosh both explain that a chiluf of a peros, a swap, a barter for peros, is if you say these peros are usur to yourself, and then you wind up selling the peros, or you barter the peros, and you get something in exchange for the peros. So that item, the money or the other goods that you get in exchange for the peros, those are the chilufin of the peros. And when we say that usur b'chilufeim, it means if you say that these peros are usur to me, and you then swap them or you sell them, then whatever you got in return is going to be usur. Giduleya means that the peros obviously have seeds, and if you plant the seeds, then the seeds grow into a peros. So those gidulim would be usur as well. Why? So the Ran says, because when a person, and we've seen this throughout the Masechta, when a person says the Lashon of Konam, when a person uses the Lashon of Konam, he makes it usur to him, usur bana, but the Lashon of Konam derives from Lashonos of Hektish. And by Hektish, the halacha is, if you're Maktish something, then not only is the item usur to you midin Hektish, but also the chilufin and the gidulim of the item are also usur midin Hektish. So just like chilufin and gidulim are usur by Hektish, so too they're going to be usur by a neder, which is prohibited on a person with the lashon of konam. However, important to note that the comparison to Hektish is only valid where a person makes a neder prohibiting himself from specific fruits. And that's meduyik in the lashon of the Gemara, where it says, Konem peiros ha'elu. In other words, he's looking at a basket of fruits and he says, these peiros are usher to me. So what happens in that case is that these peiros are usher to him. And if you sell the peiros and get money in exchange, the money is usher to him. Or if you trade the oranges for apples, the apples are usher for him. And if you plant these peiros on the ground, then the gedulim are going to be usher to him. But if a guy makes a neder generally prohibiting himself from an entire species of fruit, then it's understood, apparently, in the Lashon Nedarim, that the guy intends only that the fruit should be usher, but not that all of the chilufin of the fruit should be usher. So, for example, if a guy is looking at a basket of apples and says, these apples should be usher to me, then the apples are usher, the chilufin are usher, the gedulim are usher. However, if the guy is looking at a basket of apples and says, not these apples are usher to me, but apples are usher to me, then it's understood that Balasha Nidro, he intends to include only apples generally, but not the chilufin of apples. So that's all pointed out by the Ran. So says the Gemara Vayter. So boy Rami Bar Chama, Omar Konen Peros Elu al Ploni. If a person says, not now Peros Elu alai, but Peros Elu al Ploni. If Ruvain says that these peiros should be usher to Shimon, so mahu bi chilufayin. What's the status of the chilufin? So are the chilufin going to be usher to Shimon or not? So the Ran points out two things. First of all, the Ran points out that we don't ask a kasha about the gidulim because the gidulim are already considered to be part of the peiros, right? Something that grows from the pri is considered to be part of the pri. So to the extent the original pri is going to be usher to Shimon, the gidulim are also going to be usher to Shimon. The kasha is only by chilufin. And the Ran also says it's obvious that Shimon can go lechatchila and barter the peiros or sell the peiros because by selling the peiros, that the mere act of bartering the peiros is a little bit of a hana, right? In other words, if you're going to use the pri and utilize it in a way that's going to get something to you that's mutter ba'ana, when the original pri is asr ba'ana, that itself is a hana. So the Ran says, lechatchila, you're certainly not allowed to barter. But what happens if you did? What happens if you went ahead and you bartered the pri and converted the pri and converted the pri into money? Now, is the money going to be mutter bahana or not? So mi amrinan. So do we say like this? Mi amrinan gabe delay hoel vadam oser peros chavero al atzmo adam oser davar shelo bali olam al atzmo. Now the premise of the Gemara also I should mention is that the chilufin are a davar shelo bali olam. Why? Now the chilufin could be money, all right, or the chilufin could be other peiros or anything else that you exchange the peiros to. Usually, when we talk about a davar shelo bali olam, it means something that is not in existence now, something that's not in this world. Like a davar shelo bali olam could be something that's nolad, or it could be just something that doesn't exist. These chilufin exist, all right. The money that you're exchanging the peiros into exists now, but it's a davar shelo bali olam in that we know a person is able to be aser on his friend only something that's in his rishus. So, for example, the rabbi always gives the example: you could say that your car is aser ba'ana to somebody else. You could say that somebody else could say that your car is aser ta'ana on them. But what you can't do is you can't say that somebody else's car is aser on him. Why? The car is a davar shelo, but the car is not a davar shelo b'liolam. It's here. But it's a davar shelo b'liolam in that it has not come into your rishus that would permit you, in a way that would permit you to aser it on somebody else. So over here, if you think about the chilufin, the item that the peiros is being transferred into, is being exchanged for, exists in this world, but it hasn't yet entered his rishus. And if it hasn't yet entered his rishus, he really doesn't have the ability to aser it on his friend. And again, this case was set up so that it was saying konem peiros elu al ploni. This was not the case where the guy was saying konem peiros elu alai, where the guy has the ability to aser whatever he wants on himself. This was where Reuven was saying that these peiros are aser to Shimon. So the kasha is what happens with their chilufin. So again, the tzedarim are like this: mi amrinan gabe delay. If he would gabe delay, since for himself to aser it on himself, Hol v'adam oser peres chaver al atzmo. Ruvain could say Shimon's peres arasser to me. Therefore, adam oser davar shaloba liolam al atzmo. Therefore, Ruvain can also aser on himself not only the peros but also the chilufin. But gabe chavero, but lagabe his friend. Hol v'ein adam oser peres chavero al chavero. Over here, where Ruvain said that these peros should be konem to Shimon, Ruvain can't aser Shimon's peros on Shimon or anybody else's peros on Shimon, only his own. Therefore, therefore, a person cannot aser a davar shaloba liolam on his friend. And again, the chilufin lagabe ruuvein are a davar shaloba liolam because they have not come into his rishus yet. And if they have not come into his rishus yet, he should not be able to be aser. He should not be able to aser them on Shimon. So the Gemara's kasha is like that. So do we say that because Ruvain can't aser somebody else's peiros on Shimon, he can't aser these davar shaloba liolam, the chilufin on Shimon, o dilma, turning over to Mem Zayin Amabez, or maybe, mishum de chilufin kigadulim dami, loshnahu veloshna chavero, or maybe because chilufin are like gidulin, there's a comparison between chilufin and gidulin, it doesn't matter whether it's him, it doesn't matter whether he's ossering them on him, it doesn't matter whether he's ossering them on his friend, he can always include the chilufin in his neder. And just like gidulin would be yasser, so too chilufin would be yasser. The Ron just explains that this is not totally on what he has in mind, because you know he certainly does have in mind, says the Ron, that when the guy makes the neder, he certainly does have in mind to pick up not only the actual fruits but also the chilufin of the fruits, because there's gzeira d'rabanan that whenever the guy says peros, the chilufin are bechlal peros. But what it depends on is, do we consider this chilufin to be something that he has the ability to aser on somebody else? Also, the Ron points out that, as is going to become clear from the Hemshech of the Gemara right away, that this din of chilufin and gidulin being usur would apply not only to something that's prohibited in ana through a neder, but also something that's usur ba'ana through a Torah prohibition, like Arla, for example, is an example that the Gemara is going to bring. And also, so the Ron here points out again, if something is usur ba'ana, it's inappropriate in the first place to sell or to barter the item, because that act of exchanging it itself into something that's potentially mutter is a form of hana itself. But if one violated the prohibition and sold it, or if he exchanged the item, then on a daraisa level, it will be permitted to benefit from what he received in exchange, because what he received in exchange isn't inherently prohibited. The base fruits are inherently prohibited. The act of exchanging is ahana, but the exchange item, the item that you get in exchange, is not inherently prohibited. But the case of a neder is different, because in the case of a neder, the guy made the item like a piece of hektish to himself, and like hektish to himself, and it could be that hektish in this situation may be more chamor than an actual iser Torah, where there's an iser Torah that causes the iser hana. Okay, so says the Gemara Vayter, second line down, Mem Zayin Amabez. So Amar Rav Acha Bar Menyumi Tashma Omer Lishto. If a guy says to his wife, Konem Shani Ne Net Lech, that I am not that, and others are gores, Konem Shani Mahane Lech, that you are not able to have hana from me. So a guy says to his wife, you're not allowed to have hana from me. Says the Ron, what are we talking about here? When does this guy say to his wife that she's not allowed to have hana from him? The Ron says it has to be that he made the neder before marriage. Why? Because after marriage, he's obligated to support his wife. And so once he has a Torah obligation to support his wife, he cannot override the Torah obligation by making a neder that his wife is not allowed to have hana from him. However, if it's standing before marriage, and he says to his fiancée, you are not able to have anah from me, and nevertheless, for whatever crazy reason, she goes through with the marriage, since the iser to support is already in existence at the time of the marriage, it continues even after they get married, because it's not like the neder is uprooting the Torah obligation. It's the neder is already in place before the Torah obligation has the ability to go effective. So what should she do? So this woman is subject to a neder that she is not able to have anah from her husband. So lava, so she could borrow money, ubalechovin ban v'nifran, and the balechovin could come and collect. And the Balei Chov can collect from the Baal. Now, why can the Balei Chov come and collect from the Baal? If she borrows this, so again, Reuven says that his wife is not able to have Hana from him. So what we're recommending that is the wife go to Shimon and borrow money in order to support herself, and then Shimon, for some reason, can go collect from Reuven. How's Shimon collecting from Reuven? So the Ran says, well, again, remember, we're talking about a case where the guy made the neder before they got married, and the reason that we can't be talking about a case when the guy made the neder after they got married is because after they got married, there's a Torah obligation on him to support his wife. Says the Ran, this Torah obligation that he has to support his wife is never suspended. Even if he made the neder before they got married, there's still a Torah obligation to support his wife, but the neder makes this obligation unable to come into effect. But because this obligation cannot be totally abolished by his neder, because who are you to override an obligation that's written in the Torah, that his property is still subject to a lien to the extent that the property is used to support his wife, because you can never do away with a Torah obligation. And the Ran says this is an application of Shibudah de Rav Nosson. So what's Shibudah de Rav Nosson? So Shibudah de Rav Nosson again is like this. If Reuven owes Shimon money and Shimon owes Levi money, so Reuven could go, so Levi could go and collect directly from Reuven. Why? Because Shibudah de Rav Nosson is basically saying, well, why are you going to put me through the paces? And why are you going to make me collect from Shimon, which is going to depend on Shimon collecting from Reuven, if A owes B and B owes C, so A should pay directly to C. So this is what this case is. The husband owes the wife, but the husband is unable to actually pay the wife, because the wife is subject to a neder, asering her banah. But the husband owes the wife. And the wife now owes the creditor. So instead of the creditor going to the wife who collects from the husband, the creditor could go directly to the nechasim of the husband. So that's what that is what the Brisa had said. So my taima Balei Chovin Nifron. So why can the Balei Chov collect from the nechasim of the husband? Lav mishum de chilufin lav kigidulim dami. Is it not because chilufin are not like gidulin? What gidulin? What did gidulin have to do with here? So the Ran says, well, if you think about it, the money that she borrows from these other people, which are going to be repaid from the nechasim of the husband, are like chilufin, they're like the exchanged item of the husband's money. Because what she's doing is she's leveraging the husband's nechasim in order to borrow money, which is then going to be collected from the husband's nechasim. So she's converting the husband's nechasim into the loan, which is then going to be repaid from the nechasim. And we see that what she is able to do is, if she's not able to benefit directly from the husband, she should borrow money and have creditors go collect from the husband. So she's effectively converting the husband's money into the loan, and the reason apparently that it's mutter is because chilufin, the exchange item, are not like Yidulin. It's not like Yidulin. So Amar Rava. So Rava says, Dilma lechatchilahu delo v'aved aved. Well, no, there's no raya. How do you know? Maybe lechatchila it's usher to make this. It's usher to make this exchange, as we had said before in Amud Aleph. We had explained in the Ran that it's usher generally to exchange something into something else. But over here, maybe explains the Ran. It's not like a chilufin mamish. It's not really chilufin, because chilufin is if she takes the husband's money and exchanges it for fruits. Is she then allowed to have enough from the fruits? Here, the husband has an obligation, and she's leveraging the obligation in order to borrow money. The loan from the third party can't literally be viewed as an item that the husband's money was exchanged into. If you think about the concept, and she's basically using this obligation that the husband has as a means to obtaining the loan, yeah, maybe it's sort of like chilufin, but not really, says the Ran. So maybe there's no raya from here, because this is not really a direct case of chilufin, this is an indirect case of chilufin. Ella tashma, but we'll try to bring a raya from the following brisa. Hamakadesh ba'arla, if a person tries to be makadesh a woman with fruits that are arla, ain't a makadesha. She's not mekudeshes. Why Tosfa says because arla is something that's aser ba'ana, and arla therefore has no monetary value. And we know that when you're mekadesh a woman, you have to be mekadesh her with an item that's worth at least a shavah pruta. And so arla to you is not worth even a shavah pruta because it's aser ba'ana. So mekadesh ba'arla ain't a mekudeshes. Machron, however, if you sold the arla, the kiddush b'demayim, and you were a mekadesh the woman with the money that you get in exchange for the arla, then harezu mekudeshes. Then she is mekudeshes. So we see, obviously, that chilufin are not like yidulin, because here the money that he got, from selling the fruits of arla, are chilufin. And even though you are not able to be Mekadesh a woman by Arla, you are able to be Mekadesh a woman with the money that you get from selling Arla. So it's obvious that Chilufin are not like Yidulin. So it says the Gemara, Hachanami lechatchilahu delo v'yavad avad. No. Lechatchila, you definitely can't exchange the arla into money and then have the money and then be mekadesh the woman with the and then be mekadesh the woman with the money. But b'diyeved, we're talking about a case where you did a b'diyeved. So again, over here the b'diyeved is different because in the first case of the guy who said to his wife that she's not allowed to have enough from him and then she borrowed against his nechasim, where we said v'i avad, it doesn't mean oh lechatchila you're not allowed to do it, but b'dievad you are allowed to do it. It meant that that was an indirect form of exchange. It was an indirect form of chilufin. Here, there's a very direct form of chilufin. He's mekadesh ba'arla. We said he cannot be mekadesh ba'arla, but if he sells the arla and turns it into something else, he can then be mekadesh. He can then use that for kedushin. So over here, it literally means that lechatchila he's not supposed to, but b'dievad if he did exchange the item, then he's able to use the exchange for the exchange item, the replacement item for kesef kedushin. The Ran paskens la'alacha that somebody who illegally exchanges an item that's aser ba'ana for something else is permitted to benefit from the exchange item b'di'eved because it's a safek d'rabbanan whether chilufin are included altogether, and safek d'rabbanan we go l'kula. But we had said that the exception is if a person makes a neder on peros elu, where he makes it like hektish, in that case it's going to be yasser, because chilufe hektish are certainly yasser. So there's no safek d'rabbanan to apply. All right, so let's start the next Mishnah. So hareini alecha cherem. If a guy says that my stuff should be to you like a cherem. So the Ran explains that we're talking where the person made a neder in the Galil, where the references to cherem are thought to refer to cherem of Bedek HaBayis and not cherme kohanim. Because in Yehuda, where there were more kohanim who were living, when a person would stam say cherem, then we assume that he has in mind cherme kohanim. Cherme kohanim are not aser bahana. We know that the only way to make something aser bahana, the only way to subject something to the neder and to make something aser bahana, is if you have in mind something that in fact is hektish. And therefore it has to be that you're making the neder in the Galil, and you intend this cherem to mean cherem of Bedek HaBayis. So this is another example of holchanach alasha b'nei adam, which depends on one's location. So amoder. So if a guy says areini alecha cherem amoder aser, that the mudar, the person who was aser to have anah, is then going to be aser to have anah. Harei at alai cherem, you are to me like a cherem. In other words, that I am not able to have anah from you. Then anoder aser. Then the noder is aser. The guy who makes the nether is going to be aser. Harei alecha at alai. I'm not allowed to have anah from you, and you're not allowed to have anah from me. Shneim asurim. Then they're both aser. The Ran says, of course, there is no chiddush in this. If we already said, if the guy says, I'm usher to you, you're usher to me, of course both of them are going to be usher on each other. But v'shnei mutar m'davar shel olei bavel. But they're both mutar to have anah from dvarim shel olei bavel. So what are the dvarim shel olei bavel? So dvarim shel olei bavel are things like like pits and like a pit for drinking where the Ole Regalim would would drink water from. So these things are considered to be, the Gemara is going to get into what they are, but these things are considered to be either hefker, or they're considered to be owned by all of Klal Yisrael collectively. So they're not viewed as every single person having necessarily a real shutfus in it, and therefore if a person says that he's not able to have enough from his friend, he's nevertheless able to benefit from the Ole Bavel. However, V'asura medavar shalosa ha'ir, he's not able to have enough from davar shalosa ha'ir, like a Beis HaKnesses, we'll see, like a Beis HaKnesses and other things. Why? Because it's considered that every person in the city has a chelek in the Beis HaKnesses. By Dvarim Shel Ole Bavel, isn't it considered that every member of Klal Yisrael might have a chelek in Ole Bavel? Because again, there were two ways of explaining what Ole Bavel is. Either it's Hefker or everybody in Klal Yisrael has a chelek. So of course, yeah, but there's a distinction between everybody in Klal Yisrael having a chelek, meaning that everybody's ratable chelek is so minor that it's totally negligible, and a Beis HaKnesses, where let's say if there are 100 people in the city, well, 1/100th of the Beis HaKnesses belongs to this guy, and maybe that's why he is not able to have Hanah. Now, v'eizah davar shel Ole Bavel, what's the davar shel Ole Bavel? Kagon harabayis, v'azoros, v'abor shebem saderech, like harabayis and the azara and a bor that's in the middle of the road. V'eizah davar shel Oso Eir, and what's considered to be a davar shel Oso Eir? Kagon harachava, like the rechava, the main road, v'amerchatz, v'beis haknesses, v'ateva, v'asfarim, Vateva Vasfarim. So now Vakosev Chelko Lenasi. And Kosev Chelko Lenasi. So the Ron explains that Kosev Chelko Lenasi is not being used as an example of something that's Davar Shalosa Yir. What does Kosev Chelko Lenasi mean? The Ron says this is a means of having the subject of the Neder derive benefit from Dvarim Shalosa Yir while still preserving and retaining the isser of him benefiting from your personal property. So in other words, what do? If you say that Shimon's not allowed to have anah from you, Reuven says that Shimon's not allowed to have anah from him, so what Reuven could do in order to permit Shimon to go into the Beis HaKnesses is he could deed over his share of the Beis HaKnesses to the Nasi, so that when Shimon goes into the Beis HaKnesses, it's not like he's being neneh from Reuven. He's still not able to be neneh from Reuven's personal nechassim because he never writes those nechassim away. Rav Yehuda amar kosev lenasi, echa kosev lenasi, vecha kosev lehedyad. You could write away your nechassim to the nasi, you could give them away to another person. But ma bein kosev lenasi lekosev lehedyad, sha kosev lenasi ain tzarech lezakos, lehedyad tzarech lezakos. That if you write your nechassim away to the nasi, then you don't have to make a kinyan. It could go automatic. By hedyad, you do have to make a kinyan. Vechachamim omrim, echa ze vechazrech tzrich lezakos. No, you have to make a kinyan by both of them. Lo dibru b'nasi ela b'hove. The reason that we talk about deeding your property over to the nasi is because that's generally who you would deed it over to. Why? Because you're afraid if you deed it over to a private individual, the private individual might turn around and say, oh, this is usher to you. But if the nasi is not going to do it, because the nasi is not a guy who acts out of spite or vengeance, and so it's safer generally to give it over to the nasi. Rav Yehuda omer, ein anshei galil tzrichen lichtov. Why? The anshei galil don't even have to write things over to a nasi when, if they want to permit the subject of a neder to benefit from Dvarim Shaloso a year, why Shekvar Kotzvo Avaseim Al Yadeim? Because their forefathers already wrote all their nechassim in these communal things over to the Nasi. I'll tell Rabbi Leibowitz to pick up from the Mishnah tomorrow. There's a lot to discuss, including on the concept of a year of the Svarim being considered to be a Dvar Shaloso a year, whether you're allowed to have Hana from Svarim. What are these Svarim? How does this fit into Lima Torah, Mitzvahs, Lav Lahenes, Nitnu? So he'll probably start from the beginning of the Mishnah again, just review it tomorrow.